No, this is Air Europa. I've wanted to fly it because they fly from the U.S. and they got a decent, they have decent availability, I think, out of JFK, and they have a decent business class cabin. This was like booked through, I think, my Capital One Venture X or Business Venture X, and it ended up costing like $25 per person. A lot of people I talked to were sort of cheap. They were really like, cheap. why don't you take the train? I'm like, for $25? Why should I? Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, this episode, we talk through a Memorial Day trip. Tom, unfortunately, this year, only one of us had a Memorial Day trip, even though I tried to prod you.
Well, I mean, I went somewhere, but it wasn't on a plane.
Well, where did you go?
Well, I went to the Chesapeake Bay to go fishing with my nephew, so.
Okay, that counts. Okay, give us a trip report. We're completely shifting the entire episode.
The episode?
Fishing on the Chesapeake Bay.
Well, I mean, I got in the car. I drove 2 hours. We set up. We fished. We caught some little fish, and then we left. And my nephew enjoyed it. There you go.
A fine trip.
0 miles were earned or burned on this particular trip.
That's actually a great segue, believe it or not. And this wasn't even scripted because my trip started the same way. Not with fishing, but still on a boat. And if you look at the map of getting to Annapolis from where I live, we brush across the Chesapeake. So I'm going to argue that we were too in the Chesapeake. We took our boat. I think I probably shared at one point or another that we bought a boat last year, a small little 22 foot. There's a bakery that we like. First thing Saturday morning of Memorial Day weekend, I wake up. I text my wife who had kind of moved into my daughter's room because sometimes she wakes up and sometimes they both like to get a little extra sleep. And so it works for them. And I text my wife and say, hey, do we want to take a boat ride? And suddenly my daughter bursts into the room. I happen to ask my daughter about 6:30, 7 a.m. morning Saturday, whether or not she and my wife wanted to do a boat ride. Before our flight, we had a flight at 1 o'clock. And my daughter was just a resounding yes. And so here we go. We hop out on the boat. It's a little cold, a little windy, a little choppier than we normally like. And we end up making it out. We got into the Chesapeake Bay. So technically, we joined you and your nephew on the Chesapeake Bay temporarily. And got to our favorite bakery. Daughter had a chance to play at the playground where they have. I got a couple of coffees, a couple of sandwiches, some cookies, and we had a little bite to eat. Then we hopped back on the boat. We were back at the dock, and we had enough time to chat and pack up and hustle over to the airport. The craziest thing happened at the airport that I haven't had in a long time. I don't know if you've ever had this. I get this occasionally. I usually get it up in the air. I'm driving at Reagan National. We were parking there. A bad call in hindsight, but we'll get into it later. I probably turned down my third or fourth aisle trying to find a spot. I see the Grand Hall. Is that what we call that at Reagan National? You know, beyond the metro station? They call it like the Grand something.
Yeah, it's called something. You're right. Like the main terminal, right? The long one.
Yeah, the main terminal that's got like E to like, what is it, B or C?
Yeah, it's like the national something, you know, or
yeah. I'll just call it the Grand Hall for this purpose because
we'll figure it out eventually.
Exactly. And I just saw that and I just had a wave of calm. Now, mind you, just for everybody on here, yes, we've done trips since January, but this is the start of our first international long haul flight since January. And for longtime listeners, you probably know this is almost a record. The actual record was during COVID, which was about 377 days between international flights for me. And even that 377 days, I think the flight was to like Puerto Rico. So it's probably even longer than that for a true long haul. But still, January in Australia to now, or Memorial Day in Spain, that's a long time for me. And so I had this momentary wave of calm and just centering. And it was amazing because, like, normally I'm like driving around the stupid Reagan National parking garage saying, where the heck is the space? Come on. We got to get there. We got to get to the lounge. We got to do this. We got to do that. And I was just totally chill. And it was almost like a gift because I make this turn and I just happen to see out of the corner of my eye a spot that might be open. And it's one of those unique areas where, like, you turn left, it's right around where the circle type exits are. And you turn left and you can't go right. And so I turn left, I back up, and I slip right into this perfect spot. And we hop out and we have just kind of a relaxing walk to the terminal. Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, I was astonished. If there were 20 people at TSA that were actually passengers, I would have been surprised. Mind you, this is midday, you know, 11:30, give or take. It was not what I expected after seeing all of the all of our friends, and I'm sure Tom, you saw this as well. On Friday, like, everybody's like, "Oh my God, this is like Armageddon." Did you see that?
Well, I mean, you know, the media likes to play up that stuff, so yeah. So I mean, that's probably pick any Memorial Day Friday and they'll be like, "Oh, craziness at the airport," you know.
This wasn't media. This was like people in our friend groups. I think there were even folks in the Mylonomics Slack group that were like, "Oh my God, this is the lines are bad now."
Honestly, I might have just been, you know, not paying attention. But oh, by the way, I think National Hall. I think it's called National Hall.
Okay,
doesn't sound as amazing.
It doesn't
sound as amazing. No.
No, it just doesn't sound as amazing.
You know, you're gonna go to M1 and do the suggestion box and be like, you need to call it the Grand Hall.
Yeah, it's got to be the Grand Hall.
It's got to be the Grand Hall.
A very grand hall. They've got flags hanging from it. They put the trees in around the holidays. I mean, it's a grand hall. It needs to be elevated to Grand Hall status.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. We're through wow. Security.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move things along a little bit here, Trevor. I think there's like two listeners left.
Ooh. The barbs have come out early.
They came out early.
They did. Wow. Yeah. So we actually went to the Centurion Lounge for once.
Oh, okay.
Our parking situation was so bad that we always start at the American end and then we end up at the Delta end. And so we ended up at the Delta end. And, well, wouldn't you know, when you go through security at the Delta end of the parking garage, the Centurion Lounge is just to your right, versus where if you go to the American end, the Capital One Landing Lounge is just to your left. And so we go to the Centurion Lounge, and it was actually particularly spectacular.
Not too crowded, so. Huh?
Not too crowded. Nice food was just
what an unusual situation. Like to find the American Express Centurion Lounge uncrowded. Like that's got to be a very rare situation.
Yeah. So we get into the Centurion Lounge and it was fairly quiet. No issues. Decent bubbly and decent food. I do love their cookies.
Oh, that's true. American Express knows how to do a good cookie.
But again, not very busy. And so while we were at the Centurion Lounge, I went ahead and did the old Capital One, you know, reserve or put me on the wait list. And I was surprised it took like 10 or 15 minutes for us to finally get the, hey, you can come.
Oh, okay.
And then they give you 10 minutes. Talk about an unfortunate thing. So as we're recording this, it's a few days after they notified Venture X card members. You don't get guests, I think. And your authorized users don't get access to the Capital One lounges or priority pass without paying, I think, $125 fee.
It starts in 2026, though, right? You still got the rest of the year?
I think so. I don't know. Everybody except for my daughter has a Capital One card, so I wasn't terribly concerned because I figured I could just use her cuteness, but that's probably not going to last as long as I'd like. I mean, don't get me wrong. She's going to be cute forever, but, you know, eventually they get too big to look like they're two. Yeah. So anyway, we end up hustling over to the Capital One Landing Lounge, and we've been there probably 3 or 4 times. And I have to say, every time I've been incredibly impressed. This time, the incredible opposite. So it takes a couple of minutes to get in. We get seated. We waited 15 minutes before we saw anything, and we only had 20 minutes. So I had a beverage. My wife had a beverage because I got up and got it for her. My daughter had a beverage because I got up and got water for her. We ordered probably like 10 tapas, and only a couple of tapas came, to the point where we were like piling them onto my daughter's strollers. She's got a little tray. And so she was enjoying the tapas as we were walking to our JetBlue flight. It was really unfortunate. I was pretty disappointed with that experience with Capital One Landing.
I guess your adventures continued, right? I just now heard. I guess I wasn't 100% sure, but it's a JetBlue flight, I guess, that you took on your first leg.
This is like one of the first JetBlue flights we took. We've taken in a long time, and it was a precursor, right? So I think I had shared on a previous podcast that we had gotten JetBlue from Madrid from Boston to Madrid, and this is a brand new flight. We were on the third flight, like literally the third flight out of Boston to Madrid, and it was so cool. I'm jumping ahead here. JetBlue up to Boston, super easy. Burned points. I can't even remember how many points they were. I've been sitting on about 90,000 JetBlue points forever. So I was sort of like, okay, whatever. I just want to get rid of them. I know that that's not, and this is a topic that we talked about, and I think I punted over a draft agenda or draft show note for a future episode on this one. And in fact, I'd love our listeners' opinions here because it'll fuel our future show. But I was of the opinion, I was looking at either Alaska, I was looking at cash, I was looking at JetBlue points, or even United points. And I was like, you know what? These JetBlue points have been sitting here for like 5 years. It's not the most efficient, but I'm just burning them. How does that make you feel?
Well, you made use of them, right? So it sounds like a good deal to me. Maybe it wasn't the most efficient or you weren't maximizing, but you know what? You don't always have to maximize, right?
It felt a little freeing. I'm going to be honest with you. And I say that as a guy that between my wife and I are sitting on 240,000 Korean Air miles that predate the pandemic. I mean, like the 240,000 Korean Air miles go back to when Chase stopped transferring to Korean Air.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So we have some balances burning a hole in our... That's not the point of this podcast or this episode. So anyway, we get up to Boston, and I have to say, Boston Airport is so much nicer than I remember. They've got a number of lounges. It's all connected, except for, I think, Terminal A. Sorry for Delta. Although Delta has a lounge in Terminal E as well. And so we make our way to the Chase Sapphire Lounge. And mind you, you know, we fly up at 1. We arrive probably somewhere between 2 and 3. We took our time, so we probably got there about 3, 3:15. They turned us away.
Oh, really? It was too far away from your departure time?
This is something that was really conflicting me.
Oh, but you were connecting. But I guess, was it on different tickets? I guess, is that what the problem was?
I don't think they care. They didn't care whether we were connecting.
Oh, really?
They just said you can't get in more than 3 hours out. And this is where I was conflicted, right? Because in my head, I was like, okay, well, why don't we just wander down to the E-gates where the international lounges are, and we'll just see if we can get into one of those. Or the priority pass. Well, we got turned away from the priority pass lounge. There was at one point where I was like, okay, well, why don't I just book a Delta flight? But because, and you'll laugh at this, because I still have a Delta award that was booked either out of Bali or Bangkok to Paris, because we were talking about that for our upcoming trip. I still haven't canceled that. I didn't have enough Delta miles to be able to just book a throwaway flight. And so that didn't work out.
Hey, stop dilly-dallying.
I know. I actually walked up to the Delta Lounge and said, hey, can you just cancel this for me? And they just said no. And I'm like, I've had United and American do it for me. The Delta people, I don't know. Delta, they're cut from another cloth. And so, you know, in hindsight, I should have just booked an American flight. I would have been able to cancel it nice and easy. Book an American flight, go into the Chase Sapphire Lounge, stay there for 6 hours, and that would have been fine. Instead, we did, I don't know, 10,000 steps. Our daughter got to play in one of the playgrounds because they have a playground in there. And we got a bunch of great photo ops. It wasn't a bad experience in general. I just look back at it and I think I could have played this better. And it's one of those weird experiences. I put it out on Mylonomic Slack. I think like two or three people were like, yeah, you could have probably just done the whole, you know, flight, book flight cancel. Nobody would have cared. And I totally agree with that. A couple of folks said, you should have gone into the city. And I was like, yeah, no, not with the... We're team carry on. I don't know what I'm going to do with all the bags. You know, we don't have a lot of bags, but we got enough bags. We got a carry on. We met the carry on limit.
I'm going to disagree. I don't think that makes sense for you to go into the city.
Could have played it better, could have played it worse. Long story short, ended up getting in the Chase Sapphire Lounge. So the Chase Sapphire Lounge in Boston, I have to say, is far superior to the one that we have in Dulles in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's much, much larger.
It's larger. The kids area is nicer. It's just got a nicer vibe. Great views of the tarmac and everything. And service was great. Unfortunately, chatted with a couple of folks that were flying Spirit. Spirit does not do well. We knew this, but they were looking at a Florida vacation starting to look canceled, and they were kind of frustrated. It sucked. It was like a family of like, you know, three kids and their parents.
Well, you know, knock on wood, my Spirit trips haven't resulted in a cancellation. Frontier, no, they definitely have, but Spirit's actually been, I've been pretty lucky with them actually lately.
Oh my gosh, I saw like two or three things on Frontier the past couple of days. I'm not even going to talk about it, but it did not look good. Frontier is not playing well. Yeah. So anyway, we were able to get seats in the restaurant. Nice meal. You know, the typical burger. They have like a chicken sandwich at the Boston Sapphire Lounge that we don't have. So they have a little bit of a different menu. I thought that was actually very good. Pretty excited to hopefully get back there at some point. Definitely, yeah, kudos nice to that. Definitely have to give Robert a win there for his hometown airport Sapphire Lounge. Got to JetBlue. A321, I think, is it a Neo or is it just, I'm trying to think of what their transatlantic. It's got to be a Neo, right? It's
got to be a Neo. I mean, I thought they don't think they have XLRs yet, right? Maybe they're on order or something.
Yeah, it's got to be a Neo. So this is different than the Mint that I've flown back and forth to the West Coast. Every seat, it's essentially that a herringbone seat, but not like a horrible herringbone seat like you have on Virgin. As our friend Han had ironically opined about while I was flying to Madrid, he was flying to London. His Virgin flight was supposed to be like A350 or a newer A330.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up getting downgraded.
Big downgrade.
And remember, I think we talked on whatever the Maldives trip was, right? Where we were on the right side of the aircraft. So like the K side of the aircraft, I think he was stuck there. So he was like staring at one of his cabin mates. This was not that. I couldn't see anybody. In fact, my daughter had a problem with that because she couldn't see anybody. And so... So we're taking off. We had a flight attendant that was literally on the inaugural out of Madrid, and she was just so excited to be there. And then we had another flight attendant, Gabe. Gabe was amazing. He was just so great with our daughter, and he was fantastic. Just bar none. But we timed it wrong. So we had timed naps and so, you know, a little family travel piece here, right? You time your naps as best as you can, and sometimes you get it a little bit off. We were a half hour off. We had figured that we were really close, and she just sort of woke up about 15 minutes earlier than we wanted her to. And instead of comforting her to try to get an extra 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, we just sort of let that happen. And we paid for it on the plane because this is a 10:30 flight out. And so as we're taxiing, I'm strapped in, she's strapped in, I'm leaning over the partition. And it's hard to imagine this, but imagine it if you will. Everybody's feet are looking out to the aisle and everybody's, you know, heads close to the window. And I'm leaning forward just so I can sort of hold my daughter's hand as we're taxiing. We get to 10,000 feet. My wife throws off her seatbelt, lunges to my daughter's seat as the incredible super mom that she is. And she was just absolutely amazing the entire trip. And my daughter comes down immediately and ends up sleeping the entire flight. Food, I thought they did it really well. Not amazing taste, but everything came at the same time.
Mm. It was well, but tasted bad.
I didn't say tasted bad, just not.
Okay, fine. Just not tasted good?
Not memorable. Not memorable.
Okay. So the logistics of the meal were great, but maybe the chef needs some more flavoring or something?
Which was surprising because the other JetBlue flights I had in Mint, the food was superb. But I have to say, you keyed right on it. The logistics of JetBlue transatlantic flights. And we'll have to get Han on because he did a transatlantic flight as well to, I think, London or somewhere. But the logistics was amazing. They get the food out quick. They don't even give you a choice. Like, you either get a meal or you don't. It's not the, you can get the cold start part of the meal. And then if you want to stay up and not sleep, then you can get the hot stuff. No, no, no. This is like, you get the meal. You get the meal or you don't. And then the best part is when you're landing, you can either have the meal on board or they give you a bag. And so all three of us said, give us the bag. We want to sleep until the last moment. I mean, this is a 7.5 hour flight. There is not a lot of time for sleep. And you're landing at 11 a.m. or 11:30 in the morning. I needed every moment of sleep because I didn't want to have to take a siesta. And so the three of us did that. They gave you coffee. They gave you orange juice and like a blueberry muffin. They were absolutely phenomenal. The crew, amazing. The seat, comfortable. No mattress pad, you know, an okay blanket. I'd say it's perfectly acceptable. I mean, I'm not going to say I'd go out of my way, but maybe I'd go out of my way to go up to Boston to get to Madrid versus, no, I don't know.
What, the nonstop from Dulles?
No, I'd take the nonstop. No, there's no question.
I think you'd rather connect in Boston than maybe take like British Airways or something from JFK or, you know, some other gateway or something, right?
You hit it right on the head. I would rather go up to Boston to get directly into Madrid than to have to go through London. And I'd probably do the same thing to avoid going into Frankfurt.
Right. Yeah, that'd probably be about the same amount of trouble. Yep.
And we've talked about this. And normally I prefer to just connect in Europe. But Madrid's one of those places because the way the Iberian Peninsula sort of comes further east, or further west, rather, that's one of those places where I'd just rather connect in the U.S. And I think JetBlue with their Boston Mad is definitely a viable option. I hate the fact that it arrives at 11:30 in the morning. They do fly into Terminal 1, so you don't have to deal with what we did with when we went through on LATAM, where they had that midfield terminal, and you got to get the train, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. You know, so there's small things, but yeah, JetBlue, viable option to Madrid, definitely.
So you went to some of your frequent stomping grounds here, Madrid. It's like your favorite city in Europe or something.
And it only became even more this trip. So Ubered over to the Thompson. We had Michael Traeger on a few episodes ago. I can't remember.
Yeah, so what kind of room did you get?
Yeah, so that's an interesting topic, right? So booked through Michael for the Thompson, got a great rate. I thought it was a very reasonable rate compared to the fact that there were either points or no points, but if there were points, they just weren't close. Ended up getting a king balcony room overlooking the police station, which was interesting. Haven't been on that side of the building before. They could not make a suite available. The problem I'm finding with the Thompson is that it is so incredibly popular now. They literally don't have space. When we were in the Chase Lounge, they had a king suite or a king corner suite, one of those. And by the time we landed, it was gone. And I don't know if I had tried to do the check-in in the middle of the night, you know, before we had landed. I don't know if that would have worked. I'll have to try it next time. I was sad. The room was wonderful. The room was truly wonderful.
But I guess there weren't any, standard suites available for you to confirm ahead of time?
No standard suites. I mean, literally, there was one single suite a day out, one single suite available. And there was probably only like two or three rooms in the entire hotel. That's how popular this hotel has become. And unfortunately, I think that means that I need to start looking elsewhere. The good news is that we did start expanding our grounds, so to speak. Our listeners probably remember that you and I explored Salamanca.
I thought it was a very nice neighborhood. you know, myself.
And we found a nice little playground that we could sit at a cafe, and our daughter could play at a little play park. And I took my wife to the to that Argentinian steakhouse for her birthday.
Oh, okay.
She loved it. It turns out that where we wanted to go for another night, so we went first night to the Argentinian steakhouse for dinner, knocked it out of the park. Second night, we went to El Calamar. So El Calamar is nothing special, but it's in a nice little square with another restaurant. It's very near the Nun Bakery. Remember the Nun Bakery?
Oh, yeah, the one that we went to. Yes. Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah, and they've always had nice bocadillos, little sandwiches, and the nice gin. They're only probably about 5-10 minutes from Plaza Mayor. And so we went there second night and had a wonderful meal. And turns out that there were a bunch of locals playing. And so we let our daughter just kind of, you know, run around with them. And one of the little boys that was there, she enjoyed playing with. And it turned out that that little boy and his family lived in that literal square.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it was pretty cool. Mother was Italian, and we chatted a little bit, and then they had to go home. And of course, we're sitting there. And I'm sure this is not theirs, but we're sitting there and we see them go into the little door on the square, because it's literally part of the square. Probably about 10-15 minutes later, a Ferrari comes out of the garage, and I'm like, oh, I guess this is that kind of an expensive place.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we ended up seeing the little boy and his parents a little later. They were sitting at the other restaurant, not the one we were at, probably because there was better shade there, but cool little place, this El Calamar in Spain. Let's see. What else did we do in Spain or in Madrid? We went to El Retiro Park. It's like a big park. It's think of it like Central Park for Madrid.
Okay. So nice big green space.
Yeah, a lot of green space. Pretty nice. Some play parks. Definitely a place that we'll probably go back to. But I'd just say, yeah. Yeah, nice place to see. Play yards, beautiful. They had some beautiful, I don't know, what do you call it? Arbory, when like they do like the pretty bushes and the trees that are like, you know, really kind of, you know, Edward Scissorhands. Maybe not.
Okay. So topiaries, right?
Topiaries. There you go. That's topiaries. It. That's it. Topiaries. And so that's only a few blocks away from the Prado. So we did that. Of course, we went to Rincón de José.
Well, as one does, you know.
Yeah, we walked in there and they recognized us.
You know, I mean, it's not like you don't frequent the place often enough.
Once a year. Okay, maybe a couple of times a year.
Well, like, it has been less than a year. It has been less than a year.
No. It's funny. We were there in May.
Oh, okay.
So it was a little over May.
No, but we were there in October.
Oh, okay. You're right. I'm pretty sure they recognized my daughter.
Okay.
But maybe they recognized me. I don't know. I was going to give my daughter the credit.
And for our listeners, this is the bar where we originated, what is it, some epic drinking during the guys' trip a number of episodes ago. And of course, we revisited it during our guys' trip or for Trevor's birthday back in October. So he's made multiple visits. This was probably your third visit in a year.
And then visited at least multiple times with my family, too.
That, too.
Yeah, the first time we visited, we recounted that on episode 8. I will never forget episode 8, the Round the World Guys trip.
So Madrid did sound interesting, but, you know, I'm really excited to hear about Valencia.
I tell you, Valencia was like the best of times and the worst of times.
Have you flown the airline that you flew to Valencia before? Was this the first time?
No, this is Air Europa. I've wanted to fly it because they fly from the U.S. and they got a decent, they have decent availability, I think, out of JFK, and they have a decent business class cabin. This was like booked through, I think, my Capital One Venture X or Business Venture X, and it ended up costing like $25 per person. A lot of people I talked to were like, why don't you take the train? I'm like, for $25? Why should I? You know? And we were able to go to the lounge. We ended up going to the lounge that you and I went to, as well as the other lounge. The I think you remember the two lounges in Terminal 1 or 2. The first one is where we went with that long lounge. And then there's a second lounge that has like a, it's sort of like the mothership because you go up, and that was kind of cool, I thought. You had a nice view of the gates. It's funny because we went to the first lounge and they were like, no, you go to this lounge, you'll enjoy this better. And it was particularly funny because the first lounge, I spoke almost entirely in Spanish, completely misunderstood them. Like, you know, they hand me my boarding pass back and this and that. And then we start to walk in and they're like, no. Yeah, go that way. So it was like, you know, the interaction was completely in Spanish, but I completely misunderstood them.
Ah, well, that was your problem.
No, it was totally my fault. Look, my Spanish got better and better and better on this trip. I have to say, okay. Like I was translating for my wife. Like she understands, she hears it and she understands it. I think I end up just speaking it a little bit better. And I'm not saying that I'm good. Any of our listeners think that I speak fluently. I can figure out where the bathroom is. I can order a variety of drinks and food. I can ask for the check.
Mucho gusto, Trevor. Mucho gusto.
Oh, there you go.
No, you know, I've actually flown Air Europa transatlantic business class. Did that back flying out of Madrid a couple years ago. And it was reasonably nice. It's a reasonably nice airline. I'm kind of actually wondering what happened to them because, you know, they were going to get bought up, I thought. I think they were going to merge with, I think, what, Iberia maybe? I think that got all scuttled. Pretty not too long ago.
I thought they were still associated with either One World or
Still a SkyTeam airline. Like I think they still are.
Are they SkyTeam? We need some producing going on here because I thought I saw them for American or Avios miles.
I'm going to go ahead and correct myself and say I was right. Or I'm going to correct you and say you're wrong. But anyway. They are a SkyTeam airline.
I feel like, but then maybe... Then how can
they probably partner with somebody in the One World, but you know that's not the alliance they belong to.
Okay, this is throwing me off because when I saw them, they were more either in the American or the Avios frame of cost, not in the Delta frame of cost. Maybe it was Virgin, but I felt like because Delta like you can't go anywhere for under 100,000 points.
Well, I mean, I think if you're in Europe and you're using your Delta Sky Miles, I think you might be able to. But that's a whole nother topic.
Okay, we're gonna set that one aside.
I think we're gonna set that aside, and we'll come back to Valencia, which is a city that whatever I hear, I think of oranges or something.
Yeah. Oh my God, they had such great orange trees. Believe it or not, I was so tempted. We were walking a number of times. They have these little parks in the middle of the streets, which is beautiful, very similar to Madrid. And they've got these orange trees and the Valencia oranges. Every time I'm like, oh, I could just pick one out. And my wife said, don't, you can't, don't do that. And so we never got to experience a natural Valencia orange.
I'm sure you could go to the store and get one or something, or I'm sure there wasn't a local vendor of some sort for you to partake?
I'm sure there was. We just didn't see it. Okay. So there's a ton of things in Valencia, and we missed one of them.
Okay.
And I'm so disappointed about missing
one. What did you miss?
We missed the beaches.
Oh, it's a seaside town. I'm not going to have to do some on the fly producing here, and I actually bring up a map because I don't even know where Valencia is.
Oh gosh, it's along the Med, I believe. Okay. You know, let's not call me completely wrong. I believe it's along the Mediterranean. I was pretty impressed. So we had a number of things in our list. One of them was, and I'm hoping that I can pronounce this properly, is a Musée de Ciencias Príncipe Felipe, Prince Felipe Science Museum. And across from it was something else that looked almost like the I got to pull up a map here. It was similar to the Sydney Opera House. The reason I say that musée is because they did Andor filming there, and it was amazing.
I don't think that was the only one. This is a building that has found its way into multiple movies and shows because of its architecture.
You're 100% right. And now I'm trying to find it on the map. My gosh. They don't make this easy.
It definitely is one of these buildings that is kind of iconic because it is, the architecture is so futuristic. it really does look like it's out of place in this century.
It truly is, and it was amazing. It was unfortunate that they were renovating one of the pools, so I didn't get the greatest photos.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't quite as scenic as you might see in Andor, or they portray it as the Imperial Senate, I guess.
Exactly. But I mean, my gosh, it was just like you're in this area, and it just feels like you're in another world, and it was just so impressive. I was really. You know, it was just one of those really cool places.
It says it's in the City of Arts and Sciences. I guess there's a district of Valencia that seems to have a number of different. It's actually one of several buildings or structures in that area that really have that really futuristic look to them.
Yes. Yeah. And I just found the other one. So there's another one called Hemispheric, which is, quote unquote, a modern building with an ovoid roof designed by Santiago Calatrava. And it's funny because we actually had our drinks under that. No, I take that back. That's another one. There's another one that is called Queen Sofia Palace of Arts. This thing, and take a look at Queen Sofia Palace of Arts, listeners, please. This thing is kind of on par, I would say, with the Opera House in Sydney, the Sydney Opera House. And we had the opportunity to have drinks underneath at the restaurant Quatre Punta Les Arts. It just felt so surreal to be, you know, sipping a gin and tonic under this just incredible masterpiece of a building. I don't know if you were able to pull that up, Tom, but
I was able to pull up the Wikipedia article about it. And, you know, these buildings have been ones I've seen in a number of different movies, you know, whether it be like Doctor Who or, you know, Westworld, or, you know, there's been just so many different movies that have kind of used these as backdrops just because they're very, you know, otherworldly and futuristic and just make really interesting, you know, stand-ins for either the future or a different planet, just because the architecture is that distinctive and different. I really do look forward to going. Hopefully I will make my way to Valencia at some point in the future, but it's exciting. And when I heard you were going there, I was like, yep, make sure you go check out the Imperial Senate and enjoy. And I'm glad you did.
And the pools really just make it otherworldly too. I mean, you know, one was obviously drained. They were trying to renovate it, repair it. But the other one just sort of really just made the whole structure pop because of the reflections and everything. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Just felt so cool, right? I mean, I'm not an architecture buff, but like I love good architecture. I just, you know, I'm just not an academic about it.
Well, you know, I mean, you don't have to be. I mean, I think good architecture, when you see it, I mean, it's something that you feel something, right? It's not just a box of glass, you know, it's something that you look at and you appreciate it because it's a work of art, right? And, you know, that is one of the, you know, I find travel is one of the things that I love most about travel is the ability to see all the great, you know, artwork that's out there that ends up being buildings, right? Whether it be, you know, some of these amazing airport terminals or, you know, structures like this in Valencia, you know, that is one of the great advantages of travel is to be able to see some of mankind's amazing achievements in the arts, you know, and architecture is definitely one of them.
So well said. And all three of these pieces are just absolutely incredible. You know, another one that's incredible, I thought, was our hotel. We stayed at the Palazzo Santa Clara. I come to find out that it was a bank at one point, and at another point, it was not a loomery, like when they make clothes. Okay. Not a loom, not a tapestry.
Textile factory?
Yeah, textile factory. So it was a textile factory turned bank turned hotel.
That is some very different uses for a structure.
Especially when you call it Palazzo. I personally was a little let down about that. I thought it was actually somebody's palace at some point. So Marriott property, I think autograph collection, recommendation from Ivan, who's in the Slack group, and of course his close friend. We really need to have him on at some point. Jonathan, concierge there, amazing. He shared a great little place. I'll share it here and we'll include it in the show notes. Paleo Gastro Trinquet, great paella. So Valencia is known for their paella. Like you think of different parts of Spain, and one part of Spain is known for this or that. I know Madrid is known for their gin and tonics, probably other things, but Valencia is known for their paella, and it's incredible. It is truly incredible. And so this paella gastro trinquet is actually, trinquet is like a racquetball like game. So it was sort of a nice balance, right? He made us reservations at 8 o'clock, which is early for.
It's like first seating, right? For Spain.
Yeah. We got there and they're like, do you have a reservation? Because if not, you're not getting in here. That's how popular this place was.
Wow.
And we got in and they've got like a little like racquetball, like they call it a trinquet court. And so there were people going to the trinquet court. We were there. They had my favorite gin, which is Porto de Indies. They actually had multiple flavors. So there's a strawberry flavor. There's a blackberry flavor. Learn a lot of different things when you go to some of these different places. But highly recommend that for paella. We went to another place for paella, and the name escapes me, even though Ivan was the one that recommended it. I'll see if I can include that in the show notes. But Jonathan was at the hotel was just awesome in making recommendations. We went to the biopark. There's a zoo in Valencia that I would offer is probably, it's not the biggest zoo in the world, but it has gorillas and it doesn't have pandas. So, I mean, I guess maybe it's not the best zoo in the world, but I would offer it is probably one of the best zoos in the world. This thing, the most amazing layout and flow. Like, you don't think of zoos and you think of like, you know, how well the flow of people go or how well thought out everything is. This was probably the best zoo experience I've ever had.
Okay. I mean, I guess you do think about it, but it's kind of unconscious, right? Because, you know, if they're doing it right, you're just walking and you're feeling comfortable and you're finding interesting things and you're seeing, you know, curves and corners that kind of direct you the way that they want you to go, I guess. And I guess that's what you were reacting to. Somebody had done a really good job of designing that.
There was one point where you had to turn around, only one in the entire zoo, which I thought was really, really good. The choke points didn't exist. I'll give you an example. The lions, right? Two real interesting points about the lions. Number one, you sort of arrive upon them. It's not like they were the destination. You just sort of arrive upon them as you're going. And then you think you're there and then you're done. And then you move along and you've got like three or four other places to see the lion. So they don't bunch up. Another interesting point is the lions are an island. And I say the lions because my daughter's big on the lions. She's like, rawr! She's excited to see the lions. So the lions are an island. They have the giraffes around them. And so at one point, we're watching the lions, and they had three of them, one male, two female. And then we just see some giraffes like wandering right behind in the background. And it's like they're almost close enough like that they could like, you know, just sniff the lion's mane. They're not that close. But the way the perspective, the juxtaposition is, it was just one of those unique things. I got a photo. I'll send it to you. I don't know if we can include it.
They just presented it in just a very compelling way, it sounds like. And, you know, the way they staged it.
Yeah, very well staged. And so then you go through this park and you don't realize you're going up or down that much, but you go over, you get to see the gorillas, then you go a little bit up, you see there's a black panther, there's a leopard, and then you sort of meander your way down, you see a crocodile or a few crocodiles, which is pretty cool. And then suddenly you're walking underground and you're seeing the underpart of those water areas. And then you're just meandering your way through. I mean, it was one of those things where like, having been at the Taronga Zoo in January and seeing how disjointed that zoo experience was, this was what Taronga should have and could be. It was just so free-flowing that you didn't have to think about anything. You just follow it at all.
Sounds like you the design arts in Valencia really made for an enjoyable trip for you, because it sounds like another architect somewhere has kind of done their job amazingly in another part of Valencia to kind of aid your enjoyment.
Yeah, I mean,
that stuff just doesn't happen. I mean, people think that through, right? They design that experience.
I've never seen something designed so well. I mean, I've been to the Singapore Night Zoo, even the San Diego Zoo, which I would argue that a lot of people would say is probably one of the best in the world. That doesn't even hold a candle to this biopark of Valencia.
How large was it?
From a flow standpoint.
Was it a pretty urban zoo where they didn't have like a ton of real estate? Like, or was it pretty sparse?
So there's this big park that goes through Valencia. And the zoo is part of that park.
Okay.
I think we only walked maybe 3 miles in the zoo. So okay. I don't think it's that large, but they utilized every inch of that zoo. And I really
that's what it sounds
say,
like.
I mean, just absolutely incredible. They had gorillas, they had lions, they had giraffes, they had
Well, you know, and sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with a smaller plot of land, they have to spend more time designing it, right? Because they're trying to fit in all the exhibits and do it in a very efficient way, but do it in such a way that is very meaningful. And, you know, sometimes it's the geography kind of underpins some of your experience. I mean, Taronga, for instance, you know, it's very vertical. Like the elevation changes pretty drastically throughout that park, right? Because basically on a hill, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but they could have, having been to this biopark, they could have done it so much better.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Kills me. Cause I mean, and Taronga has so many other really cool things like the kangaroos, the red pandas, et cetera. I mean, yeah, no. Bottom line, if you're going to Spain, put Valencia on your list. And if you've got kids, put the biopark in Valencia on your list, because it's about, I think we paid about 60 euros for, we ended up spending 3 hours, give or take. You could spend more. Oh,
not for one person, for the three of you, right? So
yeah, for the three of us.
Okay, I was going to say 60 euros for one minute. Admitted, sounds a little high, but
no, I think kids under four are free.
Got it.
So we didn't pay for my daughter, but I mean, you could stay longer, see the aquarium, see the aviary, all that other stuff. But I think it's time well spent.
You had some interesting visits, but I mean, I think you had some unplanned events happen on this trip to Valencia as well, didn't you? Like there were some various, obviously, points of interest that you planned to go to, and then there was some other unplanned stuff.
So I think it was Thursday, they had some protests.
And what is with you and like, you know,
hours of
these protests. Kind of disruptive events? You seem to run into a lot of disruptive events in Europe, I have to say.
Just lucky, I guess.
Got to play the lotto when next time you're at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I got even less lucky because I cracked my toenail.
Yikes.
And that ended up causing a cut under my toe. Normally that's fine, right? Like I get that like once every other year over the summer because I like flip flops. My wife calls them slippers, you know, given the Hawaii influence because she lived in Hawaii for a long time. You know, flip flops for the rest of us. So I wear them all the time.
Not the most practical foot gear when you're dealing with rioters, huh?
Yeah, well, we stayed away from the rioters. The rioters didn't cause the cut and the break. That was just, you know, dealing with traffic and everything. That was one friction point. But so we did the biopark in the morning. This is the same day. We have a nice beverage just off of the main square, main plus. My wife got a coffee. I got a gin and tonic, as I'm known to do in Spain. Daughter got a couple of scoops of ice cream, so she was super happy. And I start to see a bunch of t-shirts walking toward the square. And they've got, you know, provocative, maybe not provocative, but like, you know, things that would lead me to think that they were participating in the protest. And so I start to, you know, nonchalantly look at my phone and try to figure out what's going on. And at the same time, my wife is starting to hear more and more volume from the square. And so we figure out it's about 6:45 and it's this protest is starting at 7 p.m. And this protest is starting about 200 meters away. And so now we're sort of at the point, okay, well, we're going to finish our drinks. We get the guy to give us our tab. We were a little frustrated because he gave like three other people their tabs before us. And it's like, we're the one with a young child. I don't want to pass judgment, but that frustrated me because, you know, okay, a couple, yeah, you guys are fine. You know, you got a young child, let us move. I always feel like maybe that's a bias I have. You know, kids, they lose interest, they need to move, give us a little bit of a break. We end up moving on, and then the helicopter comes. And there's a helicopter over, and we're sort of like, okay, well, do we go right? Do we go left? I knew what the overall protest like path was going to be, but as I'm navigating us to what I think is outside of the protest path, we see these, you know, what do you call them? Tommy wagons, or what do you call those police vehicles that are like clearly made for, like, not the SWAT vehicles, but like they're made. You know, they got the gates on them. Anyway, you get a lot of police vehicles, right? So we go far the other side of that, and we're not finding anything to sit down and eat. And so what we end up doing is if where we started was 12 o'clock, we ended up going all the way down to about 6 o'clock, slowly navigating around the streets, around the blockades and stuff. It was interesting to watch, right? We didn't actually get into any of the protests, thankfully, but we saw the helicopters flying around. We saw all the police, like, you know, pushing north and everything. So, okay, that was probably a wasted time to talk about the protest because we didn't really get into any of the action. But I hate to say it, that was kind of the point, right? We wanted to avoid the action. It's nice to know about these things, but you know, you don't always want to get into the thick of it. And we didn't want to get into the thick of it that time.
Yeah, I think I'd probably avoid the protests. I think that was probably the right idea.
So that sort of ended our time in Valencia. We had a little bit of time the following day, had a late flight to Frankfurt. So we got to the market, Mercado, which was beautiful. There's this old market, kind of reminds me of St. Paddy's Market in Australia, but like so much nicer. Probably similar to, I can't remember that market in Barcelona. Do you remember that?
The market in Barcelona. No, not off the top of my head.
Okay. So like St. Paddy's Market in Australia, but in Europe. And then we flew up to Frankfurt. I have to say Valencia Airport, not a great airport. They have a lounge, which is wonderful. They only have limited jetways. So like when we flew in, we had to use air stairs. We flew out. Thank God we had jetway. But as we're walking in the lounge, my gosh, it looked like refugees. And I don't know if it's because it's kind of a vacation town. And again, we didn't get to visit the beach. So we missed a big part of Valencia. But people are sitting along the walls everywhere. We're like sort of meandering, you know, people in their luggage just to get to the lounge. It was one of those weird experiences.
So basically the terminal wasn't large enough for the volume of people?
Well, yeah. If you want to make it so simplistic as that, yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay.
Trying to add a little color to it.
Okay, but you could just say that it was not large enough for the number of people. That sounds like what it was. what'd you fly up to Frankfurt? What airline?
Lufthansa. Lufthansa, not terribly exciting. It was an economy flight for us. I mean, you know,
how dare you fly economy in Europe? Well, I mean, come on. I mean, even like the business class is essentially the same seat anyway. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the difference between having wine or not having wine. Late flight, we landed around 9 or 9:30. Made it over to the Sheraton. Sheraton was super cheap. Was able to use yet another. So the Palazzo Santa Clara and the Sheraton, I was able to burn almost all of my Marriott certs.
Oh, nice.
Which, to be honest with you, on an annual basis is a feat of strength for me.
I agree with you. I actually need to use I have to remember to use my free night certs this year. So have not knocked them out yet.
It is so hard to find a hotel you can use a 25 or 40 K cert at.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, really happy with that. I will say that Sheraton, number one.
we stayed there, didn't we? Wasn't that part of when we did our layover for one of our Emirates trips? Wasn't that where we stayed?
Pretty sure. Yeah. That Sheraton, I stay often. I probably stayed there 5 times. They gave us a bottle of wine. Of course, the ice bucket was completely melted. We called down and they wanted to charge us for more ice. And that is my experience with Sheridan's. We ultimately went down to the restaurant, and of course, that was our like third most expensive dinner in the entire trip.
Wow. Well, how much was dinner?
My God, it was like 65 euros. I couldn't believe it. I had a glass of wine, my wife, a Coca Light, and we had like two entrees. And I was just like, how is this
65 euros? That's not a little expensive. You know, that being said, you know, $65 at a U.S. restaurant is not unheard of for two entrees.
Yeah. Yeah. But we had like a paella and two gin and tonics for less.
That's kind of like comparing, you know, having dinner in, I don't know, some place in, I guess I have to make up a low-cost city, I don't know, in Cleveland versus, you know, LaGuardia Airport.
Even in Madrid, I mean, at Calamar, I mean, we ate like kings and we didn't pay that much.
Well, even that steakhouse when we went in, I thought they were very reasonable, you know.
I mean, I think we got a bottle of wine each night, which pushed us over 100 euros. But had we not had the bottle of wine, I mean, it would have been... you know, far less. No. They were amazing. I implied it. We went back twice because my wife enjoyed it so much. So bravo on you for finding that place, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a complete, well, you know, I mean, I did spend a little bit of time trying to find an appropriate place, and I'm just glad that it worked out. And now you've had two successful meals there. So it definitely sounds like something to put on
three.
The list.
Three successful.
Oh, three. Oh, that's right. You went again. Okay.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, not circling back to Madrid, but I think we're going to look at that high urgency Hesperia for next time.
Oh, nice.
I really think that that's a very viable hotel, and I think it's reasonable. I mean, I think when you look at the Thompson Hyatt Centric at like 25 or 30,000 points, and Hesperia is like 15 or 20,000.
Yeah,
I think it's really, it's a hard proposition. Really? I mean, you know, the metro is pretty good. The city is just so incredibly walkable.
Yeah.
In Madrid.
Yeah. You know, it might not be as good a location for your first time in Madrid, but, you know, definitely for that second or third trip, it seems like that neighborhood sounds just, it's right up a lot of people's alleys. Cause, you know, at that point, you're looking kind of for that, you know, atmospheric, you know, experience. And it's just a nice place to kind of reside. You know, because it's a very residential area, right?
Yeah. And you've got the high urgency apartments if you want more room. I think you really pegged it right. You know, for your first trip, yeah, stay over by the Thompson or the Centric. That's probably a better place for you. But as you become more comfortable with the city, expand a little bit out. Salamanca is a beautiful, beautiful neighborhood. They're known for the quote-unquote Golden Lane. So they're kind of like the Fifth Avenue or the Hyde Park or the...
A lot of the high-end shopping.
The Vendôme area, you know, in Paris. It's just a very nice area. And we found that there were a lot of families. If you go a little bit inland, you know, I say inland, a little bit in from the Golden Lane... They had that one little cafe with a park, two or three families playing at this playground. And my daughter just felt, you know, just slipped right in and all the kids play together. She you know, she's on a seesaw with one of them. It's just a nice little area.
So I'm going to reel us back into Germany.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll go ahead and utter the word Fifth Freedom again, because I think that's how you ended up the final flight of this trip, right?
We did indeed. You can edit that out. Yeah, so for like 50-something thousand points, there was a spontaneous escapes offer. And we see this often. I want to just say this. Doesn't happen often. Singapore has a Fifth Freedom flight from Frankfurt to JFK and backward, both ways. They charge something in the 50-something thousand. Maybe it's 57. Maybe it's 53,000. I lose track.
So Chris Flyers, right?
Chris Flyer miles, yes. And it's business class on a 777-300ER now. I mean, it's not an A380. That's unfortunate, but they've downgraded it. It's a wonderful product. Flight was late.
It's divisive, though. Some people don't really like that seat that folds down. Right, that you need the flight attendants to kind of turn down for you.
I've flown it enough that I can do it. In fact, my wife asked me to like raise her seat for her because she couldn't figure it out. But you're right. It is a complicated seat, and you do need help if you've not been blessed with the a copious experience of
but it is one of the widest business class seats you'll ever have, right? Because I mean, the actual seat itself is among the widest seats ever in the sky.
Yeah, except if you consider the footwell, which is dang near narrow. Probably as narrow as like the old Continental business first seats that were like 2-2. So there's a balance between the two. I love Singapore. I've had great experiences in Singapore and I always sing their praises, but I'm just going to have to say it. Every one of our party said this was the most lackluster Singapore flight that we've had. We gave chocolates. I sat farther back. I was one seat from the way back of the cabin. My wife and daughter were mid cabin. My wife, her beverage was always full. I had to hit the call button probably 5 times. And that's not because I'm a lush. That's just because they never got that far back to me. The service was lackluster. They were trying. They clearly had a couple of new people on the team. In fact,
and it is a big cabin, right? The business class cabin is quite large.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same cabin that you and I flew with the guys in episode 8, but you were farther forward at the cabin when we were flying from Singapore to Incheon, and I was farther back. And so you probably didn't have the less, you know, taken care of experience that I had.
So basically, Rose needs to sit behind, huh? Is what I'm hearing.
I'm never putting her behind. I'm going to be the one that takes the hit, but you never want to sit that far back in the cabin. That's all it is to it. But yeah, they had some inexperienced people, so much so that one person had a not one, but 2 glasses of champagne spilled on her, which was unfortunate because the champagne was pretty good. And one of them was mine that they were trying to bring back to me. So yeah, the food, even though they had the book to cook, which we did, they did a great job with the kids meal. I have to say they did a great job with the kids meal. My daughter loved it. Absolutely loved it. And then ended up eating the adult dessert because it was so much better. You know, they had like a steak, like a filet mignon or whatever they call it. That's not filet mignon. And it was a little bit larger than a silver dollar. No, not a silver dollar. What's the, what do you call the Eisenhower, the $50 or 50 cent piece?
The Eisenhower is a silver dollar.
Okay. What's the 50 cent piece then?
That's a Kennedy. That's a half dollar.
Is that a Kennedy? Okay. It was about the size of a Kennedy.
A 50 cent
piece. That's how small this steak was.
So basically appetizer sized.
But an entree.
Okay.
So I'll finish this little bit of a trip report off with, we got out in Terminal 4. Now, I don't know if our listeners know that I grew up in New York. Maybe I know.
You've mentioned it before. It's been mentioned. It's been mentioned.
So I'm a program manager by trade, and I'm a New Yorker. I gave my wife 4 bullets of what we were going to do. We pre-coordinated it. I dare say we quote-unquote pre-briefed it to the point where she knew what things came down and where. Because I had to put a bunch of the stuff, I had to put like the stroller and her bag up by her and my daughter. And I had my bag and my roller back by me. So she pulls this stuff off, this, that, and the other thing. We had it all coordinated. We get off the plane and we're working our way through and she's doing awesome. My daughter is either in her arm, sometimes walking. We're kind of balancing it because, I mean, you're walking about a half mile from the plane to the customs hall. The T4 customs hall, where we entered, they had something like A through D sort of regions. And I think you know this. You've been through this, I assume. It turns out that either C or D is the choke point. Global entry is A. And so we're going. And at this point, I have rollerboard, diaper bag on top of one rollerboard, second rollerboard, stroller on top of the second rollerboard. So I've got 2 meaningful bodies of mass that I am pushing in front of me. And I'm coming up to this bottleneck and I've got somebody in front of me. And I just say, just came naturally. I said, "You're in New York, act like it, push forward." And the person, okay. And the person just looks at me and then just does what I said. But my wife just cackled, laughed. She just burst out laughing. She's like, I can't say I'm surprised, but like it was funny. That said, we're still seeing issues where with our infant, sometimes the global entry doesn't, biometrics don't work. They said that they had problems, like a complete breakdown in their system. So maybe it wasn't just us, because we saw like 50 other people pushed to that line. For folks with families, definitely would love to hear your feedback. If you've got a young child, our daughter got her passport under 2 months. And so the biometrics are obviously rather different than she is at three, yes, and a half years. But would love any feedback that anybody can share, you know, with young kids, even a little older, just, you know, how the Global Entry and the using the Global Entry app works. We've been trying hard. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We can't figure out a rhyme or reason. After that, we drove and we just got New York bagels and just drove home. And that's one of the beauties. I think, Tom, you and I have done this as well. We focus on entry into the U.S. to be within about a 4-hour drive. You know, yeah, it'd be nice to fly. We considered flying. Nothing was available. I was monitoring 3 different flights, and all of them were like $200-$300 per person. And that was
so you did just the one-way car rental?
Yeah, $111.
How much was it?
$111.
Oh, that's nothing.
I don't even know if they charge us for the car seat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's probably the way to go. I mean, that's you split that 3 ways. I mean, yeah, I don't think you're going to find a $33 the $40 airplane ticket down to DC. So
no, not even on points. I mean, you know, we had to drive to Reagan National, which was not fun. And by that point, my toe was so infected that it was like expanding beyond the toe and was kind of painful, or really painful. But, you know, we made it. All's well now.
Do you need like a purple airplane or something? You know, you're injured in the line of travel.
A purple airplane. There you go. We're creating a new thing.
I think it sounds like it. Yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Well, but you made it back
home. How do we close this out?
Very easily. It's probably indication that the episode needs to end.
Well, I guess we should say, I guess we should say that's the show. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed. Oh my gosh.
I love it. It's great. It's awesome. If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content and jokes. And hilarity.
until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.